This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
And get back into this thing. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'd like to welcome all who have joined today's class. Halima Douglas from Phoenix, Arizona. Mahata Muhammad. Wa alaikum salam from Kigali, Rwanda. Nadira Tajuddin, wa alaikum salam. Ibn Ocean Bulu, salam alaikum from Nigeria. Nadira makes dua. Allah grant you and your family and all of us the success in dunya and the akhirah. As you always say, success in the dunya is living a life which is pleasing to Allah. May Allah grant us that blessing. That was from Melbourne, Australia. Rashida Abdul Rashid, wa alaikum salam from Virginia. And Omar Farooq from Kashmir, giving salams, as well as Dr. Bushra Khan, wa alaikum salam from Nagpur, India, Saad Lona, wa alaikum salam from Oman, Hudan Yusuf from the UAE, wa alaikum salam. Zabiba Hartman from Gruten, Germany. Wa alaikum salam also. Usman Rashid Siddiqui from Pakistan. Naziruddin from Melbourne, Australia. Khalil Sabir. Greetings to all of you. Khalil contacting us from the UK, and Artur Waziri from Pakistan. Salamat Hidayatullah from Pakistan. Muhammad Ali from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Barakallahu fikum. And Masalla Sar from Italy, Adiemi Kudus, wa alaikum salam, all the best from Nigeria, Mukhtar Alam, wa alaikum salam from London, mashallah, we have a good representation across the earth, globally, mashallah. We haven't heard anybody from Malaysia or Indonesia side, so this is, I guess, getting a bit late for them. We have Grenadian, Hamza and Dale Wa alaikum salam from Grenada. Grenada is an island in the West Indies, not too far from Jamaica, where I was born. Amal from Morocco sends greetings. Wa alaikum salam and Ramadan Mubarak. Tabish Farooq also gives his salams. Wa alaikum salam. Welcome to today's class, which is our 13th session covering names 15 and 16. MashaAllah. Closing out, we have salams finally from Cleon in Medina. What is this? We had a connection problem. Let's try that again. Bismillah. This is session 13, in which we'll be covering two names of Allah, Al-Khaliq and Al-Khallaq, the Creator. Names number 15 and 16. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. والصلاة والسلام على رسوله الكريم وعلى آله وأصحابه ومن استنى بسنته إلى يوم الدين. All praise is due to Allah and may Allah's peace and blessings be on the last Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وسلم and on all those who follow the path of righteousness until the last day. Al-Khaliq and Al-Khallaq, session 13. The divine name Al-Khaliq is mentioned 11 times in the Quran. Among them, is the series in Al-Hashr, Surah Al-Hashr, Hu Allahu Al-Khaliq Al-Bari' Al-Musawwir. He is Allah, the creator, the originator, and the fashioner. The name Al-Khalaq is mentioned only two times in the Quran. Among them, Inna Rabbaka Huwa Al-Khalaq Al-Alim. Indeed, your Lord is the all-knowing creator. In terms of the meaning, linguistically, the divine names Al-Khaliq and Al-Khalaq come from the triliteral root Kha, Lam, Qaf, and are derived from the verbal noun, the masdar, Khalq. Khalaq is the intensive form of Khaliq on the pattern Fa'al. The verbal noun has three meanings, the first of which is to measure accurately or to proportion one thing according to another. And the second is to create something based on a devised model or pattern. The third meaning is to bring a thing into existence from non-existence after first making it exist to change it into something else. This root appears 261 times in the Quran in 8 derived forms. For example, خَلَقَكُمْ, he created you. خُلُق, moral character. اِخْتِلَاق, a fabrication. The verbal noun khalq refers to the acts of creating, making, and giving measurement. Al-Khaliq is the one who created the material and the time present in the universe, gave matter its properties, and set in motion its laws. He has total control over everything and manages all its affairs, but is independent of all that he has created. Allah alone is the creator, and all the rest are his creation. Allah Almighty mentions in the Quran that he is the best of creators. فَتَبَارَكَ اللَّهُ أَحْسَنُ الْخَالِقِينَ. Blessed is Allah, the best of creators. As humans and creatures fashion and make new products, Allah seemingly does so likewise, except that Allah's products are all superior to anything that humans can make. However, this comparison is meant metaphorically, as there are no other creators besides Allah. As Allah said in Surah Fatir, verse 3, هَلْ مِنْ خَالِقٍ غَيْرُ اللَّهِ. Is there any creator besides Allah? So when we look at this concept from a tawhidic perspective, our belief in the unique oneness of Allah, there are two aspects to reality: the unity of Allah and the unity of the creation. They are not mixed in any way. The creation is a product of Allah, being Al-Khaliq, the creator. For example, if we consider a sofa, the cotton fabric comes from plants, the metal from rocks, and the wood from trees. All that people did is assemble these resources into a piece of furniture. Human beings can only manipulate that which already exists. We cannot and will never be able to create anything from nothing. Moving on to Ibn Battal's four principles. Principle number one, adopt where applicable. These two divine names, Al-Khaliq and Al-Khalaq, can be adopted theoretically as human beings cannot actually create, as we said, since Allah is truly the best of creators. As human beings, we should also be the best at whatever we create or manipulate. We use the term create, whether it's works of art or inventions, etc. We call them creations, and that's our language. But the fact of the matter is that only Allah actually creates. Consequently, we should follow the Prophet ﷺ's advice of doing our best whenever we engage in work. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ إِذَا عَمِلَ أَحَدُكُمْ عَمَلًا أَنْ يُتْقِنَهُ. Indeed, Allah loves whenever any one of you does work, that he perfects it. He or she perfects it. We all ask Allah to give us the best in this world and the best in the next. ربنا آتنا في الدنيا حسنة وفي الآخرة حسنة وقنا عذاب النار. This is the dua that from the Quran that we regularly call for. Oh Allah, give us the best of this life and the best of the next and protect us from the hellfire. But we have to do our best in order to deserve the best from Allah. We can't be just asking for the best all the time. We're asking Allah, give us the best of this life. But we don't ourselves do our best. So we have to develop the mentality of doing the best in whatever we do. As the Prophet ﷺ had said, that Allah loves whenever any of us does work, we perfect it. So we have to develop the mentality of always trying to do our best. The workplace is where we should start. Actually, it starts from home. But where we spend so much of our times, you know, is in the workplace. It especially needs to be present there, because this has to do with trust, honesty in dealing, etc. The workplace norm is what we call the cat and mouse game. We have to oppose that game, not be a part of that game. We're working, we have been hired, paid monthly, to do our best or to do our least. Obviously, when we are hired, we're hired expecting that we would do our best. And that's what we're supposed to be earning on the basis of. So if we are not doing our best and we're being paid on the basis that we have done our best, then it's deception on our part. We're taking wages which really don't belong to us. So we have to oppose the cat and mouse workplace norm of only working hard whenever our supervisor are around. And when the supervisors are not around, we rest, we relax. When the cat's away, the mice will play. That's the norm. And it's major jihad to overcome this mentality. Trying to do so, you will lose friends. Your own co-workers will oppose you tooth and nail. They may even turn against us and accuse us of trying to take their jobs. You know, people who are your best friends, good friends, they see you working hard. The boss isn't around, but you're still working hard. They're flabbergasted. Why? Why are you doing that? He's not here. You can relax now. Take it easy. You don't have to work so hard. But if you say, well, you know, I fear Allah. I fear my Lord. And I'm going to do the best that I can. They say, oh, there must be some intention, hidden intention. Like maybe you want to take our jobs, you know, so he can see you and know that you've done the most, or he can see the product of what you've done, and it's far more than everybody else. So they will give you a raise in pay. They will, you know, give you a higher position, whatever this you, it's got to be something like this behind it. But we have to be firm and remember that if all of humankind hates us and Allah loves us, we have succeeded. And if all of humankind loves us and Allah despises us, we have failed. This is the ultimate criteria for determining what's good for us ultimately and what is not. When we discussed with employers in the Gulf to hire Muslim workers, when I was involved in Dawah and Riyadh and in UAE and Qatar, you know, we'd always try to encourage the Muslim owners of companies, etc., to hire Muslims, you know, because all these countries in which they were bringing non-Muslims, there were Muslims in the same countries too. So, you know, this would be a service to the Ummah, to the Muslim community, to bring them. I'm not saying don't bring any non-Muslims, but we should favor Muslims. But they said the Muslims are lazy. They don't work hard. The non-Muslims, they come and they work hard. They are reliable. A'udhu billah. We can't change such perceptions overnight. Of course, you know, because that is how many look at things, we are not responsible for what has happened in general. We can only do our part. What is Allah going to expect from us? To change this mentality of all the employers, owners of companies, etc.? No, we can't do that. All we can do is what is within our sphere of influence. We can change ourselves and possibly change some of our co-workers. So that's what Allah is going to hold us responsible for. For some professions, the doing one's best principle, when not followed, can lead to great harm amongst humans, human society. In the case of dentists, for example, in the medical type fields, in the case of dentists, if they don't do a good job, their patients may have to come back or they may go to another dentist to make it right. And they will never go back to that dentist again. So you've lost him because you did a bad job. You know, it may have made it difficult for him to chew or whatever, what problems. So it becomes a financial loss to the patients and financial loss also to the dentist in the future. But in the medical profession, sloppy work can lead to death. A Johns Hopkins study in 2018 stated that approximately 250,000 people die annually in the USA because of medical mistakes, making it the third leading cause of death after heart disease and cancer. 250,000 people. That is 700 people dying daily. That's insane. A Harvard University study said that 5 million people die globally due to medical mistakes. 5 million people. This is like COVID. You know, this is COVID is less in 1 year. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. 138 million are harmed annually. 5 million die, but there's like 138 million who are harmed. And what is that? Daily, that's 378,000 people around the world are harmed daily by doctors and nurses, mostly due to a lack of practical knowledge with the doctors and nurses, the global total cases of medical negligence. This is not now death, but it's just negligence. They did this, they did that, created problems and so on. So it's estimated as 17 million in high income countries. And in low income countries, what we call the third world, it is like 26 million cases. That makes a total of 43 million cases annually. And the number one error, mistake that is being made is in the area of prescription drug errors, giving people the wrong drugs for the wrong things, you know, sloppy work in that category is the number one maimer, harmer to human society. The other point that we should know in the context of adopting this principle is that we should know the purpose of our creation properly. These divine names can also be applied in our lives when we properly know the purpose of our creation. Most adherents of the various religions around the world, if you ask them what is the purpose of their creation according to their scriptures, usually they reply, I don't know. And if they say, I know it is this, you say, well, where in your scriptures does it say that? Well, I don't know, but I heard it said, you know, people said our guru, our, you know, whatever, said that's the case. But they don't have it clearly spelled out. In Islam, it is clearly spelled out. Allah said in the 51st chapter, verse 56, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ I have created the jinn and humankind only for my worship. Many of us know this. But I remember on one occasion when, you know, this Muslim, he brought in a co-worker with him who wanted to know something about Islam. You know, he was a Hindu. He brought him in. So I asked him as an introductory thought, you know, what's the purpose of your creation? What are you doing here? Why are we here in this world? Does your religion tell you? You have something in your books, the Vedas or the whatever? He said, I don't know. I have no idea. I said, well, you know, this is the problem. It's not written. You won't find it. Actually, in the Quran, it is written. So every Muslim knows the purpose of his or her creation. They know. So I turned to his friend who had brought him and asked him, tell them, what's the purpose of creation, brother? He looked at me like, huh? I said, what? Even you don't know, a'udhu billah. But that's reality. Many Muslims around the world don't even know the purpose of creation. So it is essential. The purpose for which humankind was created is to worship God. However, it must be noted that Al-Khaliq, the Almighty Creator, is not in need of human worship. That's important. Because though people say, well, okay, yeah, we're created to worship Allah. But in the back of their mind, why did Allah create us to worship Him? Why did he need? He didn't create human beings out of a need on his part. If not a single human worshiped Allah, it would not diminish his glory in any way. And if all of humankind worshipped him, it would not increase his glory in any way. Allah is perfect. He alone exists without needs. All created beings have needs. Consequently, it is humankind that needs to worship God. Allah has told us that we should worship Him in order to achieve success. And that success is ultimately Jannah. I mean, this is the purpose why He has prescribed us that we worship Him. He said, "Innani ana Allahu la ilaha illa ana, fa'budni wa aqim as-salah li dhikri." Verily, I am Allah. There is no God besides me. So worship me and establish regular prayer for my remembrance, to remember Allah. Because in the remembrance of Allah, the development of a consciousness of Allah is built. And this is important to understand, because sometimes non-Muslims may ask us, we as non-Muslims, we worship God when we feel like it, when it's in our heart, when our heart tells us you need to turn to God and worship Him. Whereas you guys, you Muslims, you worship God like robots. You've been programmed 5 times a day, every day. You're just on time in those times, a regular exercise. But, you know, it's missing. It's not really coming from you. It's not really coming from your soul, your heart. That may sound reasonable. No, to some, to many. Yeah, we should be worshiping Allah when our heart feels like it, but stop and think for a minute. Now, if we don't feel like it today, it's not there in our heart. So we don't worship Allah today. If we don't feel like it this week, so we don't worship Allah this week. If we don't feel like it this month, so we don't worship Allah this month. If we don't feel like it this year, so we don't worship Allah this year. Where are we headed? So when is it that we're going to worship Allah? When the calamity strikes. Boom. We're now in danger. Our life is messed up or whatever. Now we raise our hands. We call on God. Oh God, oh God. This is what and how most people worship God in times of tragedy and calamity. Whereas we as Muslims, that is not the time. We worship God all the time, regularly. Calamity, no calamity, we worship Him anyway. And in that way, because the intent here is to build something. And of course, it's worshiping Him properly. Because if we're not worshiping Him properly, we're not going to build that consciousness, that God consciousness, known as taqwa. So human beings need to worship and glorify God by obeying the divinely revealed laws, not just the 5 times prayer, but by doing whatever God has told us to do and avoiding whatever He told us to avoid. Because obedience to the divine law keeps us conscious of Allah. So it builds that consciousness we call taqwa. That's what it's called in the Quran. And this taqwa is the key to success in this life and the next. The first human beings, Adam and Eve, were created in the Garden of Paradise and were later expelled from paradise for disobeying the divine law. The only way for human beings to return to paradise, for which we were created, is by obedience to the law. That's the bottom line. Moving on to point number two of Ibn Battal's 4 points for the application of the names of Allah. Point number two is to confirm where the name is unique and inapplicable. Accepting of the uniqueness of Allah being the only creator solidifies the foundation of our faith, belief in God. Most verses of the Quran are reminders for those who already believe in God. When the Quran talks about Allah in this way or that way or the other, they're talking about Allah, assuming that people already believe in God. And it's just they don't know God properly. They have misconceptions about God. So these are being clarified. But the assumption is that the vast majority of human beings believe in God. And this is reality. Though in the West, Western civilizations, the developed world, we have so much loud outcries from the atheists. Countries have gone secularist, canceling belief in God. Well, or saying we function without God coming into the mix. And people have accepted that in the West, secularism. The vast majority of the rest of the world believe in God. It is the nature of human beings to believe in God. So what the Quran does is it addresses the majority of people from knowing that they believe in God. But there are some verses which do tackle those who say there is no God. In Surah At-Tur, there is a verse dedicated to the atheists. Very direct. Am khuliqu min ghayri shay'in am humul khaliqun. Am khalaqu as-samawati wal ard. بَلْ لَا يُوقِنُونَ. Were they created from nothing? Or did they create themselves? Or did they create the heavens and the earth? Indeed, they are uncertain. This verse is quite different from so many other verses which just say, Allah created the heavens and the earth and he's done it and benefited you and so on and so on. You should worship him. This is a gratitude for all that he has given. Worship him. But this verse is saying, did you create yourself from nothing or by nothing? Were you created by nothing? This proposal violates reason. Because you have these people who say, we just are here, big bang, by accident, whatever. You didn't create yourself. That's understood. So Allah puts this as the first concept. Humans were created from nothing or by nothing. No way. Something cannot come from nothing. And nothing cannot create something. That's common sense logic. The second proposal, humans created themselves. This is also illogical and a contradictory proposition. To create oneself, one must already exist. But to be created, one must first not exist. So you can't have this and that. These just don't work. together. So the third proposal, humans were created by something already created. That's the only thing left. But even this is rejected. This implies an infinite regression of causes, which ultimately means that humans should not exist. We shouldn't be here. Because if C1 were caused by C2, C meaning creation, creation one caused by creation two, and creation two was caused by creation three, and so forth and so forth and so forth until creation N. That means like infinite. If that's the case, infinite, we can no matter how far back we go, we still get creation this one and the creation that one and creation the other one. It means then that creation one cannot exist unless creation two does. And if you keep going back and you're saying that it's infinite, meaning it doesn't have a beginning. That's what it ultimately means. Consequently, creation one cannot exist. In other words, if human existence is preceded by an infinite amount of causes, requiring an infinite amount of time for it to take place, it is the same as saying that they will never take place. They'll never come into existence. Human existence becomes impossible. The Greek philosopher Aristotle, he argued similarly that infinite regression, that's what they call it, regression of the cause and effect chain was impossible. It's like, in simple terms, the line of dominoes. You know, people make these dominoes, set them up in all kinds of shapes and things, and then hit the first one and it falls and it falls and it falls. It does this, it rings bells, it, you know, causes balls to roll and does all kinds of things. People like to look at that, see how amazing it is. But if we just look at the line of dominoes just in front of us, put 10, 15 dominoes in front, space is in between. If the first domino doesn't fall, which causes the second, then the third, then the fourth, then the fifth, then the sixth. If the first domino doesn't fall, nothing will happen. None of them will fall. They will all sit there until somebody or something comes along and causes the first domino to fall. And that someone or something can't be a domino, because it is like all the other dominoes. So if there's not something or someone which is not a domino that causes the first one to fall, then the process is never going to happen. So the only remaining possibility is that a non-created being created humans and other created things. Belief in the divine name Al-Khaliq affirms the basic belief that nothing takes place in the universe without his permission. In terms of application, وَرَبُّكَ يَخْلُقُ مَا يَشَاءُ وَيَخْتَارُ. Your Lord creates whatever he wishes and chooses. Surah Al-Qasas. No good can be obtained nor harm avoided unless Allah decrees it. Humans are enjoined to seek refuge in the Lord of the Dawn from the evil of what he created. Allah does not attribute evil directly to himself because he is good and all that comes from him is good. The evil which comes from Allah is relative evil. It may be good from other perspectives, but evil in one perspective. For example, sunshine is essential for plants to grow and synthesize chlorophyll. But it also causes rivers and lakes to dry up, leading to drought, famine, and death. Rain is essential for plants to grow, but it also causes floods, drowning, and death. Pure evil, on the other hand, is a result of human activity. Humans think evil, and if Allah permits, they do evil. Allah, on the other hand, does not oppress anyone. وَلَا يَظْلِمُ رَبُّكَ أَحَدًا. The evil humans do is by Allah's permission. So to that degree, it is from Allah. However, humans are responsible for their evil because it is a product of their choice. Regarding God's permission, Muslim scholars of the past have distinguished between God's wish and His will. His wish is sometimes referred to as His legal wish, al-mashi'a al-shar'iyya, meaning that He wishes for humans Islam, the right way of life, consisting of submission to whatever God has instructed. However, He also gave humans the ability to accept what He has commanded or reject it. Consequently, humans may go against God's legal wish. His will, on the other hand, is referred to as His creational will, al-mashi'a al-kawniyya, meaning that what takes place anywhere, anytime, is by His permission alone. Among the things that take place are events beyond human will and events in accordance with human will. For example, the laws of nature governs humans. If one jumps up, he or she must fall back down. If the doctor strikes your knee, your foot kicks out. No matter how hard mentally you fight the reaction, your foot still keeps kicking out every time your knee is hit. Humans cannot go against Allah's creational will. When those who deny God's existence are asked, why are they successful? And others who have made similar or even greater efforts are not. They reply that it is due to their good fortune and others' bad fortune. And when human life is analyzed, it is easily concluded that all of it is controlled by good fortune and bad fortune, good luck and bad luck. Consequently, life is looked at as being controlled by the goddess of chance, Tai Chi in Greek religion, Fortuna in Roman religion. That's where fortune, good fortune comes from. Religious rites involve knocking on wood. This is what people do. They don't believe in God, etc., but they will knock on wood. They say, I'm going to do that. Knock, knock, knock. Crossing fingers. People cross fingers. Wearing amulets, like four-leaf clovers, rabbit's feet, horseshoes, while at the same time avoiding black cats, breaking of mirrors, spilling salt, and the number 13. The goddess of fortune is more appealing to Western atheism because it is a blind force, which doesn't require obedience, or does it assign obligations. So as a result, modern civilization's preoccupation with good luck is everywhere. Business people like Donald Trump have been reported to fly in feng shui experts from mainland China to guide their architects in the design of their buildings. Of course, this was before COVID-19, which Donald Trump called the Chinese virus, blamed it on the Chinese. But before that, he was known. Whenever he's building a new building, a new high rise, he would call in feng shui experts who would tell him, okay, the windows should be put at this point, this way, this size. The structure should be turned this much in relationship to its land that it's situated on, etc. You know, feng shui is this belief that the way things are fixed geographically, you know, the way you turn things, set things, arrange things, this can either bring in good or it can bring in evil. So it's like some kind of fortune-telling application. Similarly, the commander of Apollo 13 is the one that almost didn't make it. It was supposed to go and land on the moon, but they ran into problems and they ended up having to go around the moon and come back. They even made a movie of it. Very intriguing. However, when he was asked about what went wrong, he said, I should have known something would go wrong with the liftoff because the flight was Apollo number 13, which took off at 1300 hours, that's 1 o'clock, on Friday the 13th. There was no way that was going to work. This is a, you know, expert in astrophysics and all this other thing, but that's it. So most high-rise hotels, apartment buildings, office blocks do not have 13th floors. Nor are houses numbered. This is in America, in the West, UK. Houses are not numbered 13. When you go down the road, it says, you know, house number 10, 11, 12, 12 and a half, 14, 15, etc. When you go in the elevator, there's no 13th floor there. When you go on the airplane, there's no 13th row. No end of this. Belief in Allah requires the purification of the heart from any dependency on these and similar superstitions. Belief in the divine names should also offer confidence to those whose faith in the Sunnah is shaken by the doubts raised by scientists concerning different aspects of Islamic practice and belief. For example, that of the fly, the hadith of the fly, well-known hadith, in which the Prophet ﷺ said, if a fly falls into your drink, dunk him in, throw him out, because under one wing there is disease and under the other wing there is the cure. Now, as far as scientists know, there's no cure for diseases born by the fly. So they said, this is nonsense, bunk. Having the disease and having the cure in one animal, one insect, bunk, nonsense. But reality is that in the world, we have many cases where what appears to be harmful can contain the cure for the very person it could harm. For example, snake venom, the venom of snakes. Normally, if a snake bites you, you know, if he bites you on your chest, affects your heart, stops your heart, you die. But they farm snakes and take from them, just like you take from cows in your farm milk, they take venom from the snakes. And this venom, they extract from it chemicals which are used to help people who have heart problems. There are trees in different parts of the world. Maybe you brush against them, you have a reaction, you get bumps and all kinds of things. But the fruit from the tree, you take it, it cures. So it is not, something strange in nature to find both the cure and the disease in the same animal, tree, plant, etc. So it's just a matter of us saying, well, okay, they're saying, okay, so where is the one in the fly? So because we haven't found it, you know, and research is not focused on it, because we haven't found it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means we haven't found it. That's all we can say. We cannot say it's not there. The third principle of Ibn Battal is that of having hope where there is a promise. The meaning of these two divine names contain the divine promise that Allah can create better circumstances wherever and whenever He wishes, as Al-Khaliq and Al-Khallaq. No matter how impossible our situations may seem, Allah can change them. And if He doesn't create new circumstances for us, it is better for us to accept our situation patiently and be rewarded for whatever hardship we experience. We should have confidence that Allah, Al-Khaliq, Al-Khallaq, knows best, and He will create circumstances which are better for us when the time is better for us. So the divine names contain the basis for human hope, as we were fundamentally created for paradise. And Allah already has created paradise. And He promised that His mercy would precede His anger. Abu Huraira quoted the Prophet ﷺ as saying, when Allah created the creatures, He wrote in a book, which is with Him over His throne, verily, my mercy prevailed over my wrath. So knowing that is helping us to have hope in Allah, that even though we may have been disobedient, we have done wrong, we know they're wrong, etc., we hope for Allah's mercy, and we fear His wrath. That takes us to the fourth principle of Ibn Battal, the principle where we should fear where there is a warning in the name. Now, the divine names contain the element of potential punishment, severe punishment in hell, which Allah has created. It's not directly said, Allah is the creator. That's an open, neutral statement. It could be for good, or it could be for evil, relative to ourselves. So Allah created hell, and it is a punishment. So that warning should motivate the believers to do everything in their power to avoid ending up in hell. This is where our greatest focus should be regarding the fear of things in this life. We shouldn't be overwhelmed by fear of Allah's creation, which is what tends to happen to most of us. Instead, we should really fear the Creator. We should stop fearing people's opinions, fearing poverty, fearing failure, etc., etc. And instead, we should focus on pleasing Al-Khaliq. He is sufficient to provide for all of our needs. Our problem is that we often try to please people while angering Allah, like joining in backbiting to be accepted by others. It's not pleasing to Allah, even though we know it is not. We know it is wrong. We end up engaging in it just to be a part of the group, not to seem off and against. But the Prophet ﷺ said, whoever seeks the pleasure of Allah, though it is displeasing to people, Allah will become pleased with him or her. And Allah will make the people pleased with him or her. However, whoever seeks the pleasure of people, though it is displeasing to Allah, Allah will become displeased with him or her and will make the people displeased with him or her. That is the reality. Pleasing Allah should be our focus. Avoiding displeasing Allah should also be our focus. Because if we're displeasing Allah while focused on pleasing Allah, then one is going to cancel the other. If the displeasure of Allah is far greater, then the harm of it on us becomes far greater. With that thought, we'll close today's session, session number 13. And there's no bad luck in that. Session number 13. Calling on Allah using his names. O Allah, Ya Khalaq, Ya Khaliq, we know that you are the creator of all that existed, all that exists, and all that will exist. Lead us to the unshakable belief in you as our creator, and let us never ascribe partners to you. Ya Khaliq, guide us to please you and to ask you for our every need and wish. Ya Khalaq, awaken us to reflect on the wonders of your creation and make us of those who are good in form and good in manners. Ameen. Barakallahu fikum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We will now shift to our Q&A session. Barakallahu fikum. Do we have any questions from Instagram? Seems all of our questions in Zoom have been deleted. Okay, we've got some questions coming now. Faisal Ali, what is your view on the book structure and Quranic interpretation by Raymond Farin? Oh, I've never heard of it. Sorry, I can't say anything about what I don't know.
Can we eat in McDonald's?
Question, can we eat in McDonald's? If it's McDonald's in Mecca, no problem. McDonald's in Medina, no problem. In general, what we're saying is that if it's McDonald's in the Muslim world where they are taking care to make sure things are halal and avoid the haram, then there's no problem. But if we are using McDonald's in different countries, we have to look at the laws and etc. Governing it. You know, in China, for example, where pork is loved. So everything, pork is in everything, virtually everything that you're going to be eating there. Then you may have to avoid McDonald's if you're in China. But if you are in America, where they do have rules, you can find out, are they cooking with using pork fat, pork oil, etc., or mixing it up? So you would have to know the situation that you're dealing with. Otherwise, you can't make a general statement to cover all circumstances. Muna asks, I've heard that on the day of resurrection, everyone will be called by their mother or father's name. That is why it's not allowed for a woman to take her husband's surname. Is that true? No, this is not why. This is not why we don't, as Muslims, take the husband's surname. The point is that we will be called by our names. That's why the Prophet ﷺ said, name your children well, because they will be called by their names on the day of judgment. The reason why we don't put surnames of husbands after the names of the wives is because of the fact that the naming system is indicative of genealogy. For example, my name is Bilal. I have a son named Omar. Right? So the name of our family is Phillips. So my son becomes Omar Ibn, the son of Bilal Phillips. Now, if he marries somebody else, say by the name of Mariam, and she is the daughter of Bint Ahmed, father's name was Ahmed Khan. So she is Maryam, bint, the daughter of Ahmed Khan, and she marries my son. If she puts my name, my family name, Phillips, in the place of her father's family name, then that would indicate that she was from the family of Phillips and not the family of Khan. So there's mix-up taking place in the family genealogy, because the names indicate families. And so this is why it's not allowed according to Sharia. Osman Rashid Siddiqui, I am leading the Taraweeh prayers, mashallah. If I forget to do sajdat tilawa on a verse where there is, it comes to my mind after the verse, can I do it at that time? No, if you missed it, you missed it. Sajdat tilawa is not an obligation for you to make sujood at that particular time. When it was recorded, the Prophet ﷺ used to do it. It's not required. If you catch it, you catch it. If you miss it, you miss it. Muhammad Mahidi, I am from a Muslim family, alhamdulillah. My parents believe in many superstitions. I gave them scientific explanations, but they are not listening to me. What should I do? As they say, you can drag a donkey to water, to a water hole, but you can't make him drink. This is life. Your job is to inform them, tell them, to advise them, and then it's on them to accept and act or not. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, you know? Allah told him that what is on you is to convey the message, not to make people believe. وَمَا عَلَيْكَ إِلَّا الْبَلَاغُ. That's all that's on you, just conveying the message. Don't worry about the people. You convey the message, your job's done. Whether they believe, they don't believe, that's up to them. So similarly, Kundwa, Anita, when you pray alone in Ramadan after Isha, 2 or 4 or 6 rak'at, is that called Taraweeh or Witr? This is a constant confusion that people have concerning the night prayers during Ramadan. Please note that the night prayers in Ramadan are no different from the night prayers outside of Ramadan. Normally what we have, which we may call night prayers, is tahajjud. And the last prayer in your prayers of tahajjud is witr. The last odd unit of prayer is called witr. Whether you do it in Ramadan or you don't do it in Ramadan, you're doing it outside of Ramadan, it's the same. People have given it different names, like Taraweeh or Qiyam al-Layl or other names in different places, but actually they're one and the same. They're the same. From Instagram, we have any other questions? Our Instagrammers.
Can woman recite Quran during her menstruation?
Can a woman recite Quran during her menstruation? Yes, she may do so. This was not forbidden by the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Though It was noted that it was his practice that if he was junub, he wouldn't recite the Quran until after he had done a ghusl. That's his own personal practice. He didn't give any instructions with regards to it. Safiya Irfan, the recommended book about the names of Allah in Arabic. Oh, there are many books. Many books. There's one by Al-Jundi. This one is the one I use. I follow the order that he has set the names. And it's quite extensive. There's one by a female scholar by the name of Hissa. She has also done extensive work where she tackles the names which are not names of Allah, which are commonly being used, etc. She points out very clearly the focusing on the false names attributed to Allah. But there are many others, inshallah. The key is, you know, to choose the books by scholars who are clarifying that they are taking the names from those that are proven in the Quran and the Sunnah. They're based from what is proven from the Quran and the authentic Sunnah. Because you do have lists in At-Tirmidhi and Ibn Majah, you know, which are supposed to be lists of the names of Allah, but these narrations are not authentic. Even Imam At-Tirmidhi himself, though he narrated one of the well-known narrations that people use, he himself said, this narration is not authentic. Question from?
Sheikh, can we pray Isha after 12?
Can Isha be prayed after 12 o'clock? Yes. Preferable time is before midnight. And so it's really about midnight, not 12 o'clock. If 12 o'clock is midway between Maghrib and Fajr, then we're talking about 12 o'clock. But if the midpoint between Maghrib and Fajr is other than that, then that's the preferable time for Isha is up to the middle of the night. That's the point. People are taking a hadith, the middle of the night means 12. No, it doesn't. It varies from place to place all around the world. So the middle of the night is from Maghrib to Fajr. You find the midpoint. That is the middle of the night. Another question from our Instagrammers.
Sheikh, do you shorten your beard?
Do I trim my beard? Yes, I do. It was the sunnah of Ibn Umar and at least 10 other companions of the Prophet ﷺ to trim the beard. And that's why some scholars hold that even Prophet Muhammad ﷺ used to do it also. That the arguments that people hold for growing the beard without trimming, you know, so it will grow to your ankles, that this is not founded in the practice of the companions. If everyone's rizq is written by Allah, and that rizq follows their destiny, then why do people die of hunger? Question, why do people die of hunger? Why do people die from erupting volcanoes? Why do people die from tsunamis? Why do people die from other people killing them, being hit by cars? Why do people die Period. Why do people die from diseases? You know, this why can cover almost every way that we die. Why do people only live to 110 max or something like this? Why don't they live to 200? Well, it said Prophet Noah lived 200 plus. But for the rest of us, why? This is how Allah has created us. And what happens of good and what happens of evil, all are permitted by Allah. Why Allah allows certain people to die from, as we said, hunger or any other natural calamity, this is based on the will of Allah for what is better for them and better for the people around them, etc. That death from starvation may be for them the road to paradise. If they're patient with it, they continue to worship God till their last breath, then for them it was good. It's not to say that I wish hunger on anybody, but we have to understand that whatever takes place, there is good in it, whether we know it or we don't know it. We have to believe that Allah is good and He loves what is good. Instagrammers.
My son doesn't pray or fast. He is 20. What do I do?
Your son doesn't pray or fast. Well, he's reached the age of 20. If he's living in your house, then you tell him, in your house, you have to pray. There's no ifs, ands, and buts. If you're not going to pray, please leave my house. That's the reality. You're on your own. You can put your foot down like that, or you can be patient with the individual, advising him, bringing other people who he respects or whatever to advise him, moving to another place where he develops another set of friends who may remind him of Allah and remind him of his obligation, worship, etc. You can try whatever is available to you to get help from others around you. Ya Sheikh, can you perform nafila later in the night after observing the 11 rak'ats during Taraweeh, including witr? Well, the Prophet ﷺ had said that you should let the witr be the last prayer of the night for you. And that's what's preferable. But if you get up and pray other rak'at, etc., it's not forbidden. It's a voluntary prayer. So it's not an obligatory prayer where you must follow that exact, you know, format. Like Maghrib prayer is 4 rak'at. You know, what if you want to pray? Maghrib prayer is 3 rak'at. What if you want to pray 4? You know? Well, in this case, if you deliberately pray Maghrib as 4 rak'at, you have violated the prayer. You have invalidated the prayer. If you've done it deliberately. Accidentally is another story. You realize it, you make sujood as-shukr, sujood as-sahu, the prostration for forgetfulness, And you clear your slate. There's nothing against you. Last question, Kasumba Zubair asks about fasting while on a journey. What distance does that require? Well, there's not a special distance. Once you have left the boundaries of your city, you're a traveler. Where the city ends, you leave that, you're now a traveler until you return. Okay, that should have been the last, but we have a couple now more. Can I sit and offer salah? Yes, if that's needed, but the sitting prayer is worth less than the standing prayer, if you are able to stand. Tasneem Sakif, that was Madiha Shafkat. Tasneem Sakif Ibn Alam. What is the purpose of creation of the other planets and stars? Well, when we get there, we'll probably find out more. For now, where we are, they beautify the sky. A totally black sky is not as nice as a sky with twinkling stars. So the sky has been beautified by the stars. This is references in the Quran to that. Relatively speaking, now if we get to other stars, we may find other purposes, other benefits, etc. Will parents, Imran Vohra is asking, will parents who ill-treat their children be punished? Yes. And children who ill-treat their parents will be punished also. They make decisions for a child which affect the child adversely for the whole life. Well, if they did it deliberately, then they will be held accountable. If they did it accidentally, not realizing whatever, meaning the best, but, you know, sometimes we mean good and we end up doing what turns out to be apparently bad. Dr. Bushra Khan, you've talked about wazifas in the previous sessions, but I have seen people read Ya Qawi and Ya Noor 11 times after Fard prayers. Is this after Salah correct? No, there's no special number. So if they're doing it 11 because they've been told that it's going to do this, it's going to do that, that's all fake, useless, misguidance. But if out of themselves, they feel like, you know, calling on Allah, Ya Qawi, Ya Qawi, but not just calling on Allah and stopping Ya Qawi, then complete the sentence. Because otherwise, when we call like on Allah that way, it's like somebody calling out your name. Ya Bushra. Oh, Bushra. 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 If somebody came to your door and was doing that, you would say, what? Call the ambulance. We need to put this person in a psychiatric hospital. So this is the kind of position we put ourselves in before Allah, where we just blindly call the name and not add to it what we're calling on the name for. Sheikh, do you have any advice for Muslims in the West, particularly American? Oh, that's a whole lecture. Advice to Muslims in the West. Practice Islam to the best of your ability. Be together with other Muslims. Don't be separated away from the rest of the community. Try to live in close proximity. Establish institutions that look after the needs of your community. Hospitals, schools, et cetera, et cetera. There is unit. There is strength in unity. Yadullah al-Jama'ah, Allah's support, His hand is in support on the community, people living together. The Prophet ﷺ warned about living separately, that it's a cursed situation to live where you can't see your neighbors next to you who are Muslims. This is a cursed situation, destructive. Okay, our last questions now. Muna is asking, what is the best way for a woman to talk to the opposite sex, such as her childhood friends, etc.? Talk to them in public, in presence of others, etc. This is the better way. Crafty College, it's our belief that Allah's creation has no fault. Then why are some kids born with physical disabilities? No, not, we don't say it has no fault. I mean, imperfections there exist in nature. But it's all a part of Allah's plan. It's by Allah's qadr that those imperfections exist. So similarly, it's by Allah's qadr that the disabled child exists. It's a test for the parents, a trial for them, etc. And Allah will reward them accordingly for being patient with it. The last question now, Faisal Ali says, you say we shouldn't say Fatiha behind the Imam in loud prayer, and you gave evidence, but there is a hadith in Muslim where people say behind the Imam except Fatiha. Well, whatever you are convinced of, when you look at the evidence, if you're convinced that this is okay, you can do it, you know, then that's the choice that you make. But for myself, I understand that it shouldn't be recited, because Allah said, إِذَا قُرِئَ الْقُرْآنِ فَاسْتَمِعُوا لَهُ. If the Quran is recited, listen to it, once or two, and be quiet. So now if the Imam is reciting Fatiha and you're reciting Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen, and everybody's doing Alhamdulillah, the Imam is reciting, what's that gonna do? That's just confusion. And that's what happens in places where people are doing that. You know, you can't hardly concentrate on your own prayer. The recitation of the Imam suffices for those who follow him. As the Prophet ﷺ had said, the Imam was only set to be followed. So if he says Allahu Akbar, then you all should say Allahu Akbar. If he makes ruku', then you all should make ruku'. So if you want to read, I would say, then read to yourself in your mind, whatever, fine. But do not recite the Quran while the Quran is being recited in a voice which is audible, which will disturb other people around you, and which becomes a competition between yourself and the Imam. Dr. Bushra Khan is asking, Where can we read more about the four principles of Ibn Battal? Well, I really can't say I know of any book which goes into the details. Just in the course of my research, I came across his explanation, and I took it as a guide and as a format for doing the 99 names of Allah. This is as much as I know and I have. Okay, the last question, Imran Vohra. Is it compulsory for children to pray for their parents after they die? No, it's not compulsory. It's recommended. It's good. And when you die, you would like people to pray for you, make dua for you, and it will benefit you, inshallah. Barakallahu fikum. We'll end our session now. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa ant. Astaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.